everyone, I'm Andy Kahn, and thanks for checking out this episode of the Jambase Podcast. Jambase is a partner of Osiris Media, the podcast network for music. Visit Jambase to listen to all of Osiris's podcasts. Coming up is my interview with multi-talented musician Phil Cook, who I spoke to recently over a video call from his home in Durham, North Carolina. More on that chat in a second, but first, I want to tell you about this episode's sponsor, Boulder Creek Infusions. Boulder Creek Infusions has an amazing deal for its full-spectrum CBD for Jambase podcast listeners. Head to bouldercreekinfusions.com/jambase for 50% savings on full-spectrum, extra-strength, sun-grown CBD from Boulder Creek Infusions. Be sure to use the code JAMBASE for an additional $5 off. Boulder Creek Infusions hemp is sun-grown in the Rocky Mountains. They craft and infuse their products in small batches with no nasty solvents, using only coconut oil and gentle heat. BCI takes great care to preserve all the plant's cannabinoids and terpenes, protecting the delicate organic synergies responsible for maximum entourage effect. To ensure that every Boulder Creek infusion is of the highest quality, each batch is analyzed by an independent laboratory. BCI posts those results publicly, so you can see the purity, quality, and care BCI puts into its products, each of which are vegan-friendly. BCI's hemp oil is solvent-free and contains all the benefits of the original plant, just as nature intended. If you've been enjoying the benefits of full-spectrum CBD, you'll appreciate the effectiveness of Boulder Creek's 1,500 milligram CBD. If you're curious about CBD, it's a great opportunity to experience CBD for the first time from a brand you can trust. Head to bouldercreekinfusions.com/jambase to learn more about Boulder Creek Infusions' full-spectrum, solvent-free CBD. And get 50% off and use the coupon code JAMBASE. That's J-A-M-B-A-S-E for an additional $5 off your purchase. Be sure to also visit Jambase to explore the brand new Jambase Live Video Archive, now featuring over 100,000 live music videos. The JBLVA includes hundreds of videos by Phish, The Grateful Dead, Widespread Panic, Dave Matthews Band, Umphrey's McGee, Ween, Green Sky Bluegrass, Joe Russo's Almost Dead, STS9, The Disco Biscuits, Moe, String Cheese Incident, and many, many more that can be filtered by song, date, performers, and in a variety of other ways. With a few opportunities to go see live music these days, the Jambase Live Video Archive can help fill the void left by canceled tours. Explore our ever-growing collection of over 100,000 live music videos at jambase.com/videos. All right, as I mentioned before, I recently chatted with Phil Cook over a video call while he was hanging out in his backyard. Literally. He was in a hammock. We talked about Phil's weekly spiritual helpline livestream series that he's been hosting on Sundays during the COVID-19 pandemic. And Phil discussed his relationship with Oliver Wood, who recently released a track that was co-written by Phil and Oliver called Soul of This Town. We talked about Phil's former band Megafon, who recently released their excellent catalog to streaming services. And we talked about memorable experiences Phil had attending the 1997 Horde Tour, where among the things he got to do was meet Colonel Bruce Hampton. You'll also hear Phil talk about his love for one of Jambase's all-time favorite bands, The Slip, and we touched upon what's happening with his Golden Messenger, one of the many projects Phil's part of. Please excuse a few instances where the audio breaks up, one of which I want to point out was when Phil was talking about watching the memorial service for George Floyd. Phil recently shared an untitled song as a prayer for George Floyd, with proceeds going to Reclaim the Block. You can download it on Bandcamp, and part of that track will lead us into the interview. Right now. Happy Friday to you.
All good. All good.
So one of the things I want to start talking to you about is your spiritual helpline. I love it. I think it's really cool. Let's start though. I think it's best maybe if you describe to maybe somebody who's not familiar to what it's all about. Can you kind of, what's your pitch on it?
Okay. Well, first of all, it happened by accident.
Right.
I did not plan it at all. I was, I've been trying to think about doing a podcast and finding a way to connect with people that I've just met in my musician community, and just do the thing that I love doing the most, which is just talking. So there's that part of it that I love, of just connection. So I thought, well, I know podcasts are ubiquitous AF right now, but like I want one. And, and so I'm sitting there, one night, and my wife organized this, artist relief telethon here in Durham. And okay. She ran this like stream from, where she was at. And she asked me to be on, and she's like, and instead it was like early on in quarantine, and like by week three, I had already done like four or five, like live stream, like, you know, me and my guitar, you know what I mean? Like I'd done like four or five already. And I was like, I'm going to change it up. And I've been thinking about like, what could I do? And I have this pretty great collection of vinyl, like gospel music on vinyl that I've been collecting for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like, I don't know. I just like had kind of got this new interface and like a new laptop a few months earlier. And I just was like, I wonder if I could figure out how to like play some records and like actually do like a live DJ like thing. Mm-hmm. And, I had 15 minutes set and I got done with it. And I was like, that was great. Like, I love that so much. And a week later, I was just like, what if we did like a Sunday DJ set, like a hour, like I just did a DJ set, played records for my thing. Mm-hmm. And we did it. And it just like, I don't know, people like reacted to it really well, but more than anything, I'm an extrovert. Mm-hmm. An extrovert of a dude, always have been. And so like, I think that part that it was like all of a sudden I found an outlet for an hour to actually exercise that part of me, which is, it's really hard for me to do that outside of that hour. So like, yeah, I got to save that part of it up. And then when that hour comes, it was like therapeutic for me. First of all, I was really finding joy and connection and being able to explore my record collection. And then also being able to reach out and talk with and get in touch with people that were far away, near and far. And that was, you know, back in, man, I don't know, March, April. I think the first show was April something.
Yeah.
So we just started doing a show every Sunday. And so that ended up turning into its own thing. I mean, it's still evolving and changing. I kind of started having guests on and having like these interviews where I have like people from the gospel community that I knew, like, I've been lucky enough to have like people from, you know, gospel singers on, people from the gospel quartet, like music scene, people from the just singer-songwriter scene, just friends. My mom and dad have both been on the show, you know, and I don't know. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it seems very like community building driven, you know, like there's definitely a sense of trying to incorporate other people in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, it's every Sunday morning, right?
Yeah, every Sunday at noon. Yeah, and I purposely chose noon because it just feels like it's right in the middle of the day. I like the fact that it's noon. My friends who are overseas, it's not too late. It's like dinner time for them.
Oh, right.
My friends on the West Coast, it's like they're just waking up. So it's like I'm in the middle. I can do something that just feels like my constellation of people can participate in their day. It just feels like that just feels like the most accessible time.
and so what kind of prep goes into getting each episode ready?
Well, week to week, it varies a lot. So like, basically it's like, when I have an interview guest on, usually we speak or prep interview and we just like chat. Sometimes we'll just talk sometimes it's been a couple hours. We'll just like talk. I'll take some notes. So I have a couple of things that I can ask about. I don't know. I didn't have a lot of pre-production or anything going into this that was like designing a show. It was basically just running, hitting the ground running. And And it just felt good. It felt good to connect with some of the guests too that I hadn't talked with well and just be able to really chat. I loved that part of it. It was great. Just like what we're doing now. It's just like sitting and chatting and that was nice. Sometimes like, man, I remember one show, I think a week after George Floyd's funeral, like around that time, just felt like, you know, trying to like, just like the week, something, things were happening so fast and on, like the, you know, static, just like, it was just much noise, like cultural noise. And there was just so much like happening. It was just like trying to cut through and plan something felt like it was almost like too much, like trying to find something. So I ended up finding some things like really like 15 minutes before like the show, I ended up playing the whole sermon, this like 15 minutes of a sermon from his actual funeral in North Carolina here, which was just so powerful. What happened was I was actually out walking in my neighborhood right before the show, just thinking, and I ran into one of my neighbors who's a 67-year-old black man, and I've known him since we moved into the house. He's the first person we met. Mm-hmm. And he and I just got to chatting like we always do, and he asked me if I'd seen the funeral footage from the day before Saturday. And I told him I haven't, and he and I watched the whole thing right there in the street. We like watched like the sermon, and I it just knocked me back. And I went back, I got back to my house like 10 minutes before I dialed it up. I loaded it into Audacity so there wouldn't be any hiccups in the stream. And like, I literally, it like finished like right when the show started. And like, it was hitting the ground running. So like no prep and just kind of riding it, on some days.
Improvise. When you do it, a lot of times there's a painting of Nina Simone behind you, right?
Yeah.
Where's that from? Can you tell? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. It would just be a few years ago now, I actually ended up becoming acquainted with a young woman from New York. Her name is Madeline Stefanik, and she at the time was a day-to-day with the Wood Brothers, on tour with the Wood Brothers, doing day-to-day stuff, and kind of doing some low tech. And Hiss Golden Messenger, who I tour with, hired her as a guitar tech. So she actually was our guitar tech for this whole run, this couple tours we did. And so when I got to know her, and then we were hitting the band, and she just like is this phenomenal artist, dude. She just is incredible. I love it. She's 20.
Oh, wow.
I think she's 21.
Jeez.
She's very young, but she has this gift, and she's an incredible singer. She's an incredible guitar player. She does the guitar tech stuff. She's like, she's just one of these people that these young people you meet these days and you just have faith in humanity. She's like a superhuman, like she's more evolved younger person. And I've met several younger people that are more evolved, and I feel the evolution happening of people being able to emotionally handle situations better, you know? And it makes me reflect on me. It makes me reflect on my father's generation, my grandfather's generation. And, you know, and there's, we can just talk about that as much as you want or as little as you want. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, she just blows my mind, man. She blows my mind. So I have had her commissioned her to do stuff. So she has like an Instagram handle. It's Madeline Illustration. And she does all these paintings on wood of like these, of these iconic, you know, soul and jazz and gospel figures, and they're just phenomenal, man. So Oliver Wood has she did a really beautiful painting of Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Oh, cool!
For Oliver Wood, he commissioned her to do that. And then I also, I guess Well, I don't know. So basically what I can tell you is this. Spiritual Helpline was originally not going to be a Sunday show or what, by it's a record label that I had started a year ago and had got my first release in the can. And I've been working on a film for a year, that's about a gospel group from Raleigh. And so the name of the record label is Spiritual Helpline.
Okay.
So that she designed that logo. Okay. That's her too. She okay. designed that. And then she also did all the artwork and layout for the first LP that's going to be announced at some point. I mean, so I'm telling you this, I haven't like really talked to him about any of this stuff.
Wow.
So right now people understand it as a show, but like it's been a concept as a record label. And I made that official as of January this year. Like it's officially a business and everything. It's like a record label. So she's done a whole bunch of work for me. And so I asked her to do Nina Simone. She's done that for me. She's right now working on another wood painting for me. I basically feel like I could do a whole room when I eventually like build a studio in like the next couple of years here in my backyard where I'm sitting. I feel like the walls are basically going to be like, I'm just going to have like a dozen Madeline wood paintings of just like my favorite figures from music.
Yeah. I'm sure that'll be very cool. I love, like I said, man. I mean, the painting is incredible. It's enough that it made me have to ask you about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's not something that you can look at and just and forget about. It's really beautiful. It's cool though. You mentioned the Wood Brothers because I wanted to then segue into the songs that you've put out with Oliver Wood, Soul of This Town, and The Battle Is Over, But the War Goes On.
Yeah.
Those are killer tracks, man. Really, really, really like them. Tell me how you first met Oliver. Was it on that tour you were talking about with his?
Yes. Well, so what happened was, Oliver and I originally met this DJ at Lightning 100, which is like the, it's sort of like the, Radio K of Nashville or mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I met this DJ Steve Lee, and it did this morning kids program, and Steve was like a Wood Brothers like merch, he sold merch for okay. Wood Brothers, and his best buddies with Oliver, they hang out all the time. And Steve was just like, man, you and Oliver have got to hang out, man. You guys mm-hmm. have got to hang out. And so Steve curated Oliver and I just hanging. And so one day I got into town, and Steve and Oliver and I all met at Dose, this great coffee shop in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And we just kicked it and just like had coffee and just chilled. Yeah. And, you know, and it was immediate. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's some people, it's just immediate. And you're just in it, and you're just like, oh yeah, it's like, it's all short speak, and you just know, and you have all this, you know, and as soon as you start uncovering all the short speak, you're like, oh, we're friends, dude. We are like friends. This is mm-hmm. easy. Okay. This mm-hmm. is easy. It's like a portal, and you just rocket 5 years into the future of your friendship sometimes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's how I felt. And so after that, Oliver and I just started texting back and forth. And he and I were just like, well, we should write sometime. And I said, well, Hiss is coming to play at the Basement East. And we're going to be doing we're going to be getting in the night before in the evening. And then we have that whole day off before a show. And then we have a show. So I'm like, when we get into town, I mean, we could get together that night, you know. And he was just like, that sounds great. What do you got, any material? And I was just like, I do. I got this song that I've always heard your voice on. And that was the Soul of This Town, like the chords for that. I had that groove with like the guitar. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I sent that to him. I texted him a voice memo, and he was like, this is awesome. He's like, and then we just started talking about concepts, and he spit back like the first two verses you hear. He spit those out from where he was. And so we basically had the song about half formed by the time I showed up. And then when I got to Nashville, I just showed up to the studio. He was already there. And we had two chairs and two amps and two mics. We were just like basically set up like you know, like two old men, you know what I mean? Like, yep. And we're just set up right there. And like, and it just came together really fast. Like we just sat there and I showed up with two more verses. We like sat there, like bussed around for a few minutes. And then what you hear is basically what came together. And like within a half hour of me walking in the door of, and so for the longest time, the song existed as just like, as the core of it, it's just the two of us sitting in those chairs, just singing, mm-hmm. just singing and playing that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And including like, you know, the guitar solo is like, that's a lot, like Oliver's playing and I just played the guitar. So like all that shit, just like, it just came together. Like it, sometimes it just does. And it felt really great. And eventually I came back to the studio, to Nashville for like 48 hours, last year. And we had plans, actually. I was going to be there for in April for like a whole week, dude. We were going to spend a whole week and just writing and working on stuff. Yeah, we just get along really well. We just have the same like mind, and I love our process. It's very easy. It's all yes-driven shit. You know what I mean, man? We just like, it's all go and build, and we're just like, I don't feel, I don't feel insecure to bring any kind of thing. I've sent him shit that was like, way left field of just like what I think of where the Wood Brothers have put out or wherever I've put out. And he's always receptive and I'm the same. And I can't say enough how much I just love his voice, man. I love his voice. I love the expressiveness in his voice. I love the range and the timbre. He's one of those singers that it's just like, that's how long it takes for you to know Oliver Wood singing. It's just like, it's that snap. It's an instant. You're like definitely. Oliver Wood. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And I love that so much. And that's like the mark of a great singer for me. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I don't know, man. I love it. I just, I'm sure it's just the beginning of he and I making stuff. And I think once we get this quarantine business down and like testing feels like it just becomes more of a easy thing to do, I'm sure we'll be able to just continue on, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I was gonna ask if you have any plans for the future, you know.
Always, man. I think it's just an ongoing thing. I think once you start a collaboration with somebody and it just feels right, then it's just an ongoing thing. I think it should be that way.
Is it just the two tracks that you guys have right now?
It's just the two tracks and the battle is over, honestly. Like Oliver came up with that on his own, and then he sent that to me and I recorded that the harp and the vocals in my house one day, so that was there. But we have more ideas that have begun, so we have work to do. So
definitely, yeah, well, looking forward to more, man. I mean, it's definitely a really cool start, and it was really cool like just hearing the fact that you two had collaborated, you know, like when that track came out it was like, holy shit, Oliver's got a solo song and he co-wrote it with Phil. Like what? You know, it was kind of out of nowhere, but then it makes perfect sense too, you know?
Yeah, man. That's yeah, it does. It to me, it makes sense too, which I love. It's just big sandstorm. It's hitting.
So another thing I'm pretty excited to talk to you about is, and I'm excited that I have something more to talk to you about than just kind of doing the Saturday Night Live. Do you remember Megaphone Man? That was awesome. because I'm a huge Megaphone fan, and I actually there's a reason to bring them up because they just landed on. You just put the albums on streaming services, which is really fucking cool. It's been a long time coming for this guy.
Yes. But
not to mention though, I already did have the record, the self-titled. I had my copy. I didn't need to get the new pressing, which quickly sold out. Shows just how popular you guys could be or are, I should say, I suppose. So what prompted the getting those albums out to more people?
I think it's just like, it feels, well, there's a couple of things in the works, right now that I can't really, that I can't really talk about right now, but, okay. It makes sense that we, get that catalog back out there. And so there was some of that just felt like it also, honestly, it's a pretty steady stream of people that like reach out through the Bandcamp page and reach out through filters or whatever. People write in like very regularly, just being like, hey man, what do you guys think you're gonna like, it's mm-hmm. it's enough that it's just like, it's probably time, and it's cool, man. It's nice. So I think that it marks, it marks the time passing. I mean, it's crazy how I can't believe 10 years have flown by since.
Yeah, that blew me away. I didn't realize that either. Like until the announcement, it was like, holy shit, it's been that long already. Amazing.
Yeah, man, that's been that long. And I haven't, for whatever reasons, I think that it's good to get some distance. I think when you're in the middle of making stuff and the band like Megaphone was like, three good friends just like sorting themselves out in front of people on stages and in front of each other in studios and stages and on the road for sequential years, it was just a crash course in how to be a band and how to do this, so in some mm-hmm. ways it always felt like the first job, or it felt like an internship, or it felt like it in some ways it was like, well, we didn't know what we were doing, so it didn't really count. There was some part of it that just felt like it was always in the business of forming, so it just didn't feel like we had arrived at anything. So it was easy for me on the heels of it finishing, it was easy for me to kind of just be like, that was cool. Now I know what I want to do. And so I like mm-hmm. went into this, into what I really wanted to do and where I arrived that beginning, and I went into make like Southland Mission and all the stuff that I went on to do. I felt like all that stuff was like prep for me to realize where I could go with this and like really wake up to myself in a way. So it's only been with distance and time. And honestly, Friday when it came out was the first time I had listened to that in 10 years. I hadn't listened to any of that.
Really?
And the music continues. So it was a cool moment. I texted the guys. I texted Joey and Brad, and we all live here still, so we all see each other and we all talk like, almost daily. We all still like send each other jokes and
real quick, Brad is Brad Cook, your brother, and Joe is Joe Westerlin, the drummer.
That's right. That's correct.
Yeah. Just to be clear.
That's correct. Just to be clear.
I've got a funny story about Joe, actually. I was at the High Sierra Music Festival last summer. Ooh. and I was watching Mandolin Orange play, and Joe came off, he was playing drums with them, and he came off stage. I'm forgetting their names, the two primaries in that band,
Andrew and Emily.
Yes. They did a little duet, and Joe's standing next to me. And one of the guys I worked with came up and I was talking to Joe my colleague was like, hey, I'm Steve. Who are you? And Joe was like, I'm Joe. And he didn't realize that he had just come off stage, and he just thought I was talking to him. And so he was like, what do you do? And Joe was like, I play in that band. And my colleague was like, oh, no shit, really? And then Joe explained to me that he was Joe of Megaphone. And I was like, wait, you were in Megaphone? Like, I didn't put together that it was him playing drums with Mandolin Orange, And so it was like, holy shit, man. And like, I started totally fanboying out on him. And then he had to like stop me and be like, hey man, this is really great, but I got to go back and play. And so I almost made him late to getting back on stage because I was so excited that I figured out that he was in Megaphone.
That's cool, man. Yeah. It's just kind of random. It's kind of random where, you know, it's random where you find yourself. And I think that happens to all three of us. You know, because we've all just like done our travels since then and been in different places. And what's really nice for me is I remember being on the road with Hiss last summer and we ended up at Harley Strictly Bluegrass Festival out in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And Mando was playing and Hiss played and it was perfect. It was like Golden Gate Park, man, beautiful, like near dusk. The sun was coming down. The weather was incredible. And Joe came off stage and we ran into each other and we're like, oh dude. And we hadn't seen each other for like months. And it was just meeting up in like, you know, some random city at a festival and just being able to just like, you know, grab a cold beer and just like walk around and just enjoy a day. And those are the moments, man, that are, you know, those are the moments that like made that band what it was anyway. That was like that. I think that was the core of that band anyway. It was always really about friendship and about support. It's a beautiful thing. And so, you know, for me, I think the coolest thing I can tell you about Megaphone coming out is that I texted Joe and Brad. I was driving out to, recording studio on on Saturday. It was just a week ago. On Saturday, I was driving out in the morning to a recording studio in Chapel Hill. And on the way out there, I was just like, man, this is crazy. And so I actually was like, I'm going to listen to a Megaphone song right now, actually, because I haven't, you know, this is like, this marks the occasion. So I went to the first one, I knew which one I wanted to listen to. I wanted to listen to Isadora, which is an instrumental song off of the self-titled record that Joe wrote.
Yep.
And I wanted to listen to that song because I have a really great memory of making that song in the studio and that together. And I was listening to it and it was just one of those moments where it's just like enough time passes and you're able to just be, see it for what it is and the beauty of what it is and all the innocence and the vulnerability, the exploration, all the things that we were able to just like say yes to that so many people limit themselves. And for some damn reason or another, we just didn't. And that felt like it was sometimes a detriment, but it felt like the biggest strength of all time. When I listened to that song, I was like, I'm so damn glad that we did what we did. I texted Joe and Brad and said, hey, I'm just listening, driving to the studio and listening right now and just like full of love right now, dudes. And they're like, and they texted back and they're like, both of them were like, me too. And I'm like, I put on Isadora and both of them were like, me too. So literally all three of us listened for the first time to the same song.
That's insane. That's so cool.
At the same time.
Oh man, that's so cool.
And then when we texted each other, so it was just like, I mean, we're, you know, no matter how much time passes or whatever's going on, like our asses are still on the same page, man.
Yeah,
you know what
man.
I mean? It's like, it's pretty beautiful. So it's cool, man. I'm very happy to have that music out in the world and it's good.
You know, one of the part of the sort of the mythology, if you want to call it that, of Megaphone is the 1997 Horde Festival that apparently you guys attended together. I saw this week you posted a picture that you just found recently of you're shaking the hands with the Colonel Bruce Hampton.
I was so stoked, man.
How'd that happen?
It was like it was cool, man. I mean, we grew up in a place that didn't have a shitload of we had to make our own shit. You know what I mean? We grew up in a place that was we had to drive 90 miles to Minneapolis to go see a show, which is what we constantly did that. But we were also mm-hmm. 17 and we couldn't get into even 18 play. We couldn't do much. So we go to this festival and it was we were really, really excited to see Medeski, Martin, and Wood that day. That was collectively Joe and Brad and I. That was our favorite band. You know, this is back in the day when Joe and Brad and I were in a band called Mount Vernon, right, which was our high school band. That was way back in then. So we were very, very excited to see Medeski, Martin, and Wood. And we were very excited to see Ben Folds 5, which is great. And that was it was a really great day. Primus played that day. Mm-hmm. Beck played that day. Neil Young played that day. It was and there was crazy. Oh, Morphine played that day. It was such a good, it was an insane lineup, right? And so, what I remember is, and these artists would all just show up there. So I saw Bruce Hampton. It was the drummer from Morphine, Bruce's band had this keyboard player. I forgot what his name was. He was kind of a wild guy. And the saxophone player from Morphine, and then Wes Claypool jumped on stage, and it was just this really wild before cell phones, bro. You know what I mean? Yeah. No one could take a video of that. You literally just had to take out your mm-hmm. That's what you mm-hmm. got. You know what I mean? That's all you got back then. And it's crazy to think about how in that moment, how many phones would have just been up recording mm-hmm. in the air, mm-hmm. watching that thing, you know? But that was a wild day. And I remember meeting Darren Jesse and Robert Sledge and Ben Folds that day at a merch table. And I remember with Joe and Brad and I got a poster signed for our friend Sarah, who was in Mount Vernon with us. And I remember giving that to her, later. I remember breaking down, our car battery died in the parking lot, and I remember meeting somebody that I ended up becoming still lifelong friends with, jumping our car that time. I mean, there's so much shit that went down that day.
Was it at Alpine Valley? Is that where it was?
It was not at Alpine Valley. It was at Somerset.
Oh, okay.
Somerset. Yeah.
Yeah, where, I know that place in Milwaukee.
No, not Summerfest. It was actually near Valley Fair in Minnesota. It was just over the border by the Mississippi River in Minnesota. And it was this Vans Warp Tour would play there that. I don't know. Gotcha. It was kind of by Valley Fair or somewhere like that.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what else do you kind of remember from seeing shows at that time, you know, when you saw Medeski and Martin Wood, did you ever think you would write a song with Chris's brother?
Right. Obviously not. Well, we showed up there and it turned out that you know, what's funny is that I think maybe this is weird to say, I got to ask Oliver actually, but somebody's brother in the band got married, and so the band actually didn't play. So we were so bummed that it was that was the band I showed up there to really see. And so the Medeski Martin Wood didn't play that day, but we went and saw them. We would travel insane distances to go see shit. I remember going to see. Driving to Chicago and driving back that same night, 6-hour drive, oof, to go see John Zorn Masada. I remember going to see I don't know. We went to some, driving to Madison and back in the night. I just remember all the times we just wouldn't think twice about driving, you know, driving 2 hours and then driving back. And then we went on later to go play Minneapolis and then drive home at 3 a.m. in the winter in blizzards on the regular, dude, back to Eau Claire. so many times. It seems so sketchy now. In whatever minivan was rusted out minivan we were driving in, you know what I mean? Back then in the 2000 or whatever. So I remember, I mean, the late 90s would have been like a lot of like, I think the, like the other band, Joe and Brad and I really Slip, we love the Bar Brothers, first band, The Slip. It was like
The Slip,
and them several times. They were a great band. I mean, they had like all the heart, you know what I mean? Yeah. I think that
we got them to, we got
trio,
them to,
and also just the trio.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, we got them to reunite for the Jambase 20th anniversary party last year, which was awesome.
How was it?
It was it was fantastic. They also, there was a Surprise Me Mr. Davis show the night before too. It was kick ass. Brad just recently talked in an interview about how that may have spurred them to get back to doing some more stuff. So
nice,
we'll see.
Man. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. that would be really awesome. Yeah, and it's cool too, because I think it's just like, you know, as time goes on, I've just like been able to reconnect with those guys. It's like, I mean, and The Slip was crazy. Is this at some point? Because Brad Barr's name is actually Philip Bradford Barr.
Okay.
So I remember when I told him I'm here with my brother Brad. He's like, oh, actually, my name is Philip Bradford Barr. Like my name is like so. He always remembered me and my brother, because when we would show up to places, he'd be like, oh, you've got both my names. Like, you're like the brothers that show up to my to see whatever film, Brad.
That's funny.
And so the first time I saw The Slip was actually at the High Sierra Music Festival in 1999. So I went out and saw them because there was a band from Northfield called Bobby Llama back in the day the singer-songwriter from Minneapolis, Ellis, she was the lead singer of that band. So I remember, like, we were friends with them. Mount Vernon was like, we love Bobby Llama. So they played High Sierra. So my brother and I drove out to California. Oof. And we were out there, and we went, and that's when I saw The Slip for the first time and talked to them. And then I would go on later afterward to see them in Humboldt County. Like, you know, I would see them, and I saw them in New Orleans. I saw them in Berkshire Mountain Music Festival out in Massachusetts. I saw them in Madison on the terrace. I saw them every corner of the country basically before I was 21. It's wild vibe.
So you're quite the Slip head.
I was like a Slip head. And then later on when I was actually touring, because they were out touring and I was still just like band dude, you know, in like some local band.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then later on it was in my late 20s, I started touring, and then I started running into them, and you know, we got to know each other as like peers, as
professional.
Like,
we're
like, hey, we're out here doing this, you know, so.
That's awesome. I want to mention something. I saw you at the Eau Claire's Festival in 2018. And you stopped to address the audience, and it was one of the more memorable moments of that festival for me that weekend. You talked about how you grew up not far from where you were standing on stage. And I specifically remember that you talked about your father's record collection. And how it was a sort of a way for you to live outside of the small confines of Eau Claire. Do you still have access to those records?
I have, let's see. So what we started doing was every year for Christmas, for about 10 years, Brad and I could pick 10 records each out of his collection for our own. And we could kind of, I've gained like I have my dad's copy of Moondance by Van Morrison, which is, I think, probably like my dad's, like the record I associate most with my father is like Moondance, that record, which is like insane that is not a greatest hits record.
I know.
It's insane that's not his greatest hits record, because it's like front to back. It's so crazy what it is. But, and my dad wants us to play, Into the Mystic at his funeral. He said that since we were kids. He's like, this is a song. I want this song at my funeral. And, you know, it's like, all right. So I've got access to some of that stuff. I mean, some of it we ended up just kind of, after Brad and I got all the good stuff. And I don't know if Brad had like 15,000 records at some point in time. And he had this insane record shelf and all this stuff. And I think at some point in time, it's just his style. It's more of his personality and everything. He just had to shed everything. And he ended up actually just like selling off his whole record collection. I'm more of like the sentimental one out of the two of us. And in terms of like, I'll hold on to like some things forever. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was like this book or like this rock or this whatever. Like that's sort of out of the two of us, that's more me, my style. But so I've got some pretty good stuff from my dad from there. I got my dad's copy of American Beauty. And
I've got my mom's copy of Working Man's Dead.
Nice. Yeah.
That was my first time hearing the Grateful Dead when I was like 11 and I still had the Fisher Price record player, you know, like the orange and brown one. And
yeah,
I got out Working Man's Dead and I still remember that day. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I got a bunch of records from my father-in-law too before he passed. Yeah. You are a father,
wow,
right?
Wow.
You have kids, right?
I have two kids right now.
Are they exploring your records? Are they exploring their grandpa's records?
Not yet. I don't trust them with that kind of thing yet, man. I think once my dad let me, I was probably, I mean, I would say like I must have been around 9 or 10 when he let me take a record out of his sleeve and put it on the turntable and put the needle down on his stuff. And my record player right now is up on a wall on a shelf, and there's absolutely no way either of them could reach that thing at all.
How old are your kids?
4 and 9.
Okay.
So my oldest, I don't know. I think the thing that's kind of funny is that like I could see at some point them being like interested in maybe, I mean, who knows? It could be, but also when I was a kid, that was what we had. I mean, we had that in the house. We had the radio and we had the turntable. We didn't get a CD player until I was like 14 or 15. We got a CD player. So all we had was my dad's record collection and a cassette player. And my dad would make, like vinyl to cassette mixtapes, which that is the best. Like when you're going like, when that's the vibe, man, whoo, that is a great sounding mixtape.
My father-in-law would make those. And then he actually made like, he had like notebooks that had the songs listed in them. And so it would just be like cassette A or whatever. And then you'd have to look inside the book and see what he had actually put
like
in there.
Like a card catalog.
No, exactly. Yeah. It was
a true library.
Incredible. Yeah. Yeah. And he was special. I also want to just real quick ask, you've mentioned his a couple of times. Is there anything cooking there? No pun intended.
Yeah, you know what? There's a live record from that last tour. It's the last whole thing we did for Termsender. A whole bunch of touring in the fall up through January, basically almost up until quarantine on the road. Mm-hmm. And we recorded at a lion's share of those shows. So I would say there's a pretty good trove of, and the band was kicking. There were some really good zones that we were getting into over the course of the tour. And I think that's reflected in some of the recordings. So I think there's one that came out already this year. And I think they're prepping a second one right now. That's going to be pretty badass. That's all no repeats from the first one at all of songs. So that's great. I know there's another Hiss record in the can. or almost that's being worked on right now. I think that that is possibly, I think Mike is always writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's always writing and he's always demoing. And so that's
so,
just,
so we'll see.
So, yeah, I mean, you can pretty much expect that like something's always happening with his, like there's always, I mean, Mike's very prolific. He's just a prolific dude, man. He's just always, when he's home, he's working on stuff and he's writing. And when he's in the van, you know, he's constantly pulling out his like note, pulling out his like journal. And he's like, just, he's got writing like phrases down. And so he's constantly got that brain on, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. Well, looking forward to more from whatever comes of that.
Yeah, man.
And so what's your plan for the next few months then? Just keep going with the spiritual helpline and
Yeah, well, I got a lot to prep right now. So I think we're heading towards I think people will see the show for the next couple of months, do its just being the show, and then once we get to a certain point, then there'll be start to be some a bunch of stuff kind of on announcements and stuff rolling out. And then I think as soon as we'll just see, I don't want to say a timeline on it completely yet, but as far as I know, it's just like, you know, you'll see it change in the next couple of months. It's going to escalate like a lot. So there's a lot going on. So yeah. So I mean, it's basically gonna be like a gospel music label. And I'm going to be sourcing music from modern tradition bearers that live in the Carolinas here. And so you're going to see like, I'm working on other releases from other artists. That's always in the studio, doing, and I'm just like, so that's exciting stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm really stoked about it. And yeah, that's that. And then, been writing a lot of music in the last like 2 years. I've kind of broke open my brain all over again. I think every 5 years I acquire a new instrument and then like dive deep into it or whatever. That's kind of been my vibe. So like 2 years ago I got into some drum programming and some drums and some synthesizer stuff, which like a whole massive world for me. And so like I've been spending all this incubation time, like no one's gonna hear anything really for a while I get my feet really wet and really dive in. But I'm creating stuff with that every day and getting to kind of like that same place I do with all my other instruments, where I just find a way to say what I want to say with it and use so that my voice comes through. And I think that's the most important thing. So I've been writing a lot of music and there's a lot of stuff. I think since I started doing that and got Ableton as a recording software, my actual output has just like tripled in terms of just like what I can get out in 15 minutes. I can have an idea down that sounds like something, as opposed to all the days of yore where I would have to pull my banjo out of the closet after my kids went to sleep, then tune it and set up a microphone and make sure the microphone's placement whatever it was, and then take everything down or whatever. And this is a totally different thing. It's like way more adapt to my lifestyle. I can actually sit down. I can have an idea of just like a melody, a rhythm, start somewhere and build it quickly. And it makes sense. And it is something. And it makes me so happy that I just don't have all this shit kicking around in my brain and just on my voice memos on my phone. I can actually like extrapolate things that sound like the beginnings of arrangements and the beginnings of ideas and things that are just more fleshed out that are make sense to me, that I can bring to situations. And that's more interesting to me right now. So I don't know what that's all headed. I don't know what's going on with all of it, but I have a shitload of stuff and we'll just see. I'll just keep working on that until something makes sense. And we'll just see. It's still in the I don't know phase and I'm just doing it every day.
That sounds really cool. And it sounds like maybe we're going to have another conversation in a few months, man.
Yeah, something.
Right on. Well, I really appreciate your time today, man. Thank you so much. Best of luck with everything. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Stay stealthy.
Yeah, stay stealthy. That too.
Stay stealthy.
There we go. Just merge, yeah. Smash them together.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah. Well, it was my pleasure. Yeah. It's great talking to you and thanks for reaching out and the same to you. Just find our ways to just like find our ways to help, find our ways to just like, you know, tap into our humanity right now and like, you know, and transcend like the bullshit and vote.
Amen. Amen. Get out and vote, everybody.
Amen. Get out and vote, yeah. Do you wanna know? Don't you wanna know? Do you wanna know? Don't you wanna know?
Brings us to the end of this episode of the Jam Based Podcast. Thanks to Phil Cook for taking the time to chat with me. Head to bouldercreekinfusions.com/jambase for 50% savings on full spectrum extra strength sun-grown CBD from Boulder Creek Infusions. And be sure to use the coupon code JAMBASE at checkout for an additional $5 off your order. Thanks to Jake Alexander for helping produce this episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the Jam Based Podcast. And if you like what you hear, give us a bunch of stars, leave us a review. Tell your friends to check us out. We'll be back soon, so in the meantime, if there's a responsibly socially distanced way to go see live music, put your mask on and go see live music.